Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest is a writer and author. She writes the most beautiful poetry on motherhood. She's got several books. The latest is Beautiful Chaos. I cannot tell you how much I love these books. Buy one for yourself, buy one for a friend. You will not regret it. Honestly, it's like the biggest gift you can give yourself. She has three children, hence all the books on motherhood. It is Jessica Ehrlich. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Look, I heard so much that it's given me a big head. I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you. And thank you for your beautiful endorsement on the book. It means the world.
Oh, absolutely. Honestly, your poetry is just so gorgeous and it fixes you in the present of motherhood and, you know, what you're experiencing now. But it also, it's like this beautiful healer of everything that's come before. We are in this together, but in a really beautiful, poetic way that just gives everything understanding.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing about poetry as well, which is why I started writing, is just this way to organize my thoughts. And I think, you know, becoming a mother, there are so many thoughts. Like, even though you're run off your feet, you sort of also feel like you have this time to just sit. And I remember one of my primary teachers actually read out one of my poems at her wedding. And it was just something that I just really loved to do. And I stopped for a little bit. It wasn't until after my second that I got back into it again.
It's amazing, isn't it? That's just that, it does seem that beautiful way of kind of getting what you can't really put into words a lot of the time out. Like actually finding the words to express it and organising it in a way that it does fix you in where you are, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. And I'm so glad as well when I think about, when I look back and I read some of the pieces that I wrote, I think, gosh, I couldn't actually write that now because I was so in it. I was so in that moment and it was raw and it was tender and I was really vulnerable. And I'm so glad that I wrote when I could because it really does take me back. And it also, like, I look at it now and I think, wow, I've come so far from that place because not all of it is sunshine and rainbows. You know, some of it is really hard and we can feel quite alone on reflection. But when I read the pieces that I wrote when I was in it, or it was like 2 a.m. and I'd been, those are actually the poems, the ones that I probably jotted down in, say, like half an hour. They're probably the ones that I think resonate the most with others.
Yeah, yeah, mm. absolutely. How old are your children? You have three.
Yes, I do. So they're 6, 5, and 18 months.
No.
We were only going to have two. That was what we sort of set out to do. So we had two a year apart because we thought, let's just have them close together, rip it off like a Band-Aid. We'll get all of the phases in at once. And it really doesn't work like that. but no one could tell me that. And it was intense. It's great now, though. But anyway, yeah, it was probably when Holly was about 2.5 that I started to think, right. Oh, actually, maybe there's another one in us. So now we have three.
Amazing. Let's go back to your childhood to start with, because you live in Christchurch now, don't you?
Yes.
Over in New Zealand. Is that where you grew up?
Yes, it is. Yep.
And what was your childhood like?
It was a pretty simple childhood, I guess you could say. Flashy things, but we had a pretty close family. You know, the little wee notepads, and they were always listening to my poems. And I remember that just being such a theme throughout my childhood as my writing.
Did you ever look ahead to the future and see yourself being a mum?
Not so much a mum. And this is the funny thing, is that I remember saying when I was really little that I wanted to be a poet.
Right.
Not really knowing like what that entailed. And I guess in my head, I thought like you had to be a certain type of way to be a poet. Like I didn't think you could just be someone who wrote something that was truthful. I just thought, like, I don't really know what I thought, but I knew that I wanted to do something in that space. And it was kind of like a, oh yeah, you know, everyone would just be like, oh, okay.
A very far off concept that it's not even something that you factor in until you are faced with it or meet someone that you're like, actually, let's do this.
I just wasn't actually sure that I had that like real maternal side of me. Although, you know, like I always loved animals and, you know, I looked after my younger brothers. And so, you know, I did love kids, but it wasn't something like I had friends that would say, all I want to be is a mum, or my dream is just to be a mum. And, you know, it still does. Like it actually still does. I need things for me to be a better mum. Yeah, I need to do things for me.
I wonder if with things like maternal instinct and you know, mother's instinct, I wonder if there's sort of a pressure that comes with that to want a certain thing. And actually, if that's not there, it can sometimes feel a bit jarring that that's not. Why don't we feel that if other people are so desperate to be mothers?
Yeah, I think there's definitely societal pressures there. I do feel like that's shifting a little bit. I know that there are more people now talking about, you know, we're starting to, like, I guess, shift the conversations and those, like, questions that we've just automatically asked that shouldn't be asked, like, oh, so you're going to have children now? I mean, we don't know people's struggles. We also don't know if it's even something that's on the cards, you know, it doesn't have to be. So I kind of feel like, yeah, it's been something for so long, but I am seeing a gradual shift, and I think that's good.
Yeah. Can you remember falling pregnant with Harry?
Yes, it was like 2 months after our wedding that we didn't have to face any of those struggles, and we got pregnant quite quickly. And when he was born, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of women, as empowering as it can be and as beautiful as birth is, it can also be a really traumatic thing that we go through. And just like the way our mind just comes to terms with what just happened, you know,
and well, you were turned away from the hospital, weren't you, in labour?
I was pretty much told that I wasn't in labour. And because I had never experienced labour before, it was my first baby, I didn't know really what I should be feeling. And B, I didn't want to be a hindrance to anyone, which is so crazy because you're about to give birth. Like, you're about to embark on, like, the biggest thing, like, in your life. And you don't want to be a hindrance. And that could just be me. My voice got louder as the births went on. But...
Right.
With him, I got turned away, and I did try and turn me away again. And it wasn't until I started vomiting that they did an examination on me, and
they hadn't examined you until this point.
I think they did examine me the first time, right. But it's all a blur. I'm sure I was examined the first time, but I wasn't examined when I came back in. And then when I was 9 centimeters, but they, you know, I was going to go home before they'd actually checked me. Until I vomited on the way out, and they thought, oh, we should probably check her. And then, you know, we sort of went on to, I mean, he was a healthy baby, and I was just so, so happy about that. I was so relieved, and, you know, I had all of those feelings. And it was like, for me, it was an instant bond, but I definitely had that trauma, I guess, attached to that. It was very hard for me to reconcile everything that had just happened. Yeah. And then breastfeeding became really tough for us. And I feel like that kind of set the postnatal anxiety in motion that we kind of carried forward for a while.
How did that present itself?
At first I just thought, oh, this is baby blues. Like, we've talked about baby blues. A lot of women experience that with the crash of hormones. Mm-hmm. But it was because it lasted for so long, even after I made the choice to stop trying to breastfeed, really unenjoyable. I wanted to enjoy my baby. I really did. And I just remember, I can't remember if it was mum or my midwife, someone said to me, you've got to draw a line in the sand here. You've got to put yourself first. Happy mum, happy baby, right?
Yeah.
And so I did. And things were a lot better. I felt like I got to kind of like shift back into myself, into this new role of being a mother, the mother that I needed to be for him and mm-hmm. the mother that I wanted to be for him. But I still got those intrusive thoughts. And I think it was like the thoughts of just constantly wanting to keep him safe and feeling like there were just risks everywhere. But they were very graphic. And I didn't want to talk about that because I thought, oh God, there's something very wrong with me. That I realized that it was actually something that a lot of people go through, and it can attach itself to traumatic events or just fatigue, which of course, you know, as mums, we are very tired.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And did you know, like, what gave you the courage to start talking to people about those intrusive thoughts?
Initially, it was just something that I blurted out with my husband because I just didn't feel like me. It was just, right. It was quite a random time where I remember sitting at the table. It was in the middle of the day and I just blurted it out and I said, I don't feel good. I think I need to talk to somebody. And so we kind of set down that path. But that was I think that was probably the hardest part, was just saying it, voicing it. After mm-hmm. that, everything became a lot easier. Because if you follow the right people, you know, you've got to look at social media like a village as well. They give you yeah. the right energy that you need. And if you're not getting that, then you need to change that. But I found those people that sound so weird, but it was so much easier to share it with strangers than it was yeah. with people I knew that were close uh-huh. to me. They came way later.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, my friends, you know, like not my really, really, really close friends. But I mean, I wouldn't put up a piece of my writing on my Facebook page. Because
yeah.
that the fear of that judgment was so much scarier than setting up just a random page and just putting it out there. Because I guess in my head I thought, well, the people that are going to find this are going to be the people that need it. And they're going to be exactly yes. where I'm at. And we just made these really like authentic, genuine connections. And it yeah. was such a pivotal part of my motherhood journey, is starting yeah. that page.
Yeah. Yeah, and just getting those words out and being able to realise that you're not alone by letting other people know that they're not alone. It's kind of that bounce back, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Also, so going back to the breastfeeding, if you have experienced that pain that comes with it, I know you said it's going to sound awful about the toes curling. If you've experienced it, you will totally understand that kind of feeling of, oh gosh, I've got to go through mm-hmm. that now. And I think there's mm-hmm. so much language out there about how it's this beautiful intimate moment and this beautiful thing, but actually for a lot of people, when it's not working, it is excruciating pain. And then we've got that double guilt of, no, but I must carry on, whether that's from society or something that we have in our own heads that we can't kind of stop, you know. It mm-hmm. is that there's so much built in around that. It's really hard.
Oh, it is. And I mean, you know, for me it was like the shards of glass, kind of almost like a psychological pain.
Yeah.
When I went on to have Holly, my second, I was more afraid of breastfeeding and trying that again than I was
really?
The birth. I was way more terrified of breastfeeding because that's how much that kind of messed me up. And I really, you know, I went through countless lactation consultants and I was going back and forth. I mean, I spent my 30th birthday in an office for the longest time trying to get that latch right. And it was just, sorry to everyone listening, but it was a bloodbath. It was awful. And I was like, I can't do this. This yeah. is just not working for us. And look, I don't know if this is directly related. I went on to be able to feed my girls. It wasn't without its struggles. And yeah, it wasn't a walk in the park. There was pain there to begin with, but it was manageable and I felt like mm-hmm. I could manage it. Down the track, you know, Harry, he's got sensory processing. I do wonder if that's related. It could have been anything, but no lactation consultant could work out what it was. And, you know, I just think sometimes it's not meant to be your journey and you have to make peace with that. You're still an amazing mum. You know, you still love your baby. Absolutely. You'd still do anything for them. But how you feed them is just such a small part of this parenting journey.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's talk about the 4 months after Harry was born, because that's when you... I know that you said you wanted them close together, but you literally, you fell pregnant at four, when Harry was 4 months old.
I know, it's
and this
mad,
was the plan. I know, that people came up to me when Buzz was really young, was like, if you go now, you know, that's great, get all the baby stuff done in one go, and then you can just chill out. All the baby gates go, everything goes. Come on, Jess.
I mean, you know.
Tell us the truth of this situation.
It kind of, like, it makes sense in your head when you think about it like that. But then what you don't think about is the fact that you are up all night. I mean, unless you have amazing sleepers, which we did not, we were yo-yoing between rooms because one, you know, and at the time our house, it was really little and, you know, all of our rooms were right next to each other. I think no matter what, you've got a baby screaming and they're going to wake up. No matter if you've got wings in your house, you know, you wake up to that noise. And so we were just yo-yoing. And I would be petrified of nighttime. As soon as it was like kind of like into that bedtime routine, which, you know, now with our children older, we're like, you know, we know we've got some time. You know, you get to that point. I think as well, like the phases are so close together that when one is starting solids, then the other one's like crawling, or when one's learning to crawl, the other one's walking. So as I mean, my kids walked a little bit later. So when I had Holly, Harry was just over a year old, and that's when he was starting to walk, and that was crazy. That was a crazy time. So I think as well, like as soon as you kind of get used to one thing, then you've got to forget it all and learn the next thing. And when you've got two of that happening so close together, it's quite challenging.
How has it been having Heidi? The other two are still super young, but having Heidi is kind of the baby of the family, whereas the other two would have been the babies.
Yeah, oh, it's the best. She is like, she's the family baby. It's just so great. We were really nervous about changing the dynamic because things were so good. And because they're so close together in age, it's just like we're having a lot of fun with that now. I mean, you know, they fight a lot, as siblings do, but they're also best mates. And so we thought, oh, you know, is this gonna change things? Dynamic shift, I guess.
Yeah. How did Holly and Heidi's births compare to Harry's?
So that was great. with Heidi, I went down the same path again, but I was pushing her for an hour and she didn't budge. So I got sent to theatre because they were going to have to do an emergency C-section.
Yeah.
Which was quite petrifying for me, the thought of surgery. Like I hadn't had any time to think about it, so I was kind of like, oh gosh, this wasn't part of the plan. But you know, we all know that things don't always go to plan. I didn't envision that happening.
And also if you've had two births that haven't led to a C-section, you probably don't even think that's going to be the way that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it didn't look like that was going to happen either. My midwife was pretty certain that everything was fine, her heart rate was fine, but she'd gotten her chin stuck in my pelvis somehow and she just wasn't coming out. And again, she was another big bub. The crazy thing is that I had the most amazing obstetrician. So she, I remember her smacking a consultant's hand out of the way. He came at me with the the forceps, right. But he was going to cut me. Because generally, if you're going to have them, you do. And she said, no, we're going to try them without them and we're going to let her push. And anyway, I did. She saved me from having to go through that. So I did have the forceps, but I didn't need an episiotomy. And I was able to push her out with a little bit of guided assistance. And it was fine. It actually, like, despite that last minute kind of like, oh my God, what's happening? The birth was actually fine. And she was great.
Yeah. And now it's like, you know, I love the fact that you've said, called her the family baby.
Yeah. I heard that term, and it's like someone used that for the third baby, and it's just so true. Like, she is. It's been such a blessing.
Yeah, I can remember being in our third home and the other two just wouldn't leave him alone. He was always in someone's arms.
Yeah, that's so nice.
My sister-in-law's just had a little baby. And whenever we see her, ours always say, can we have another one? We're like, no, we have our three. You enjoy hugging Mabel, then we can go home and sleep.
My son said something so funny to me the other night. We were, I still lie with him to get him to bed because we have the best little conversations and he's six. And he goes, so we were talking about periods and I tried to explain it the best that I could. I have no idea how it came up, but it came up and I was like, well, I'm going to tell him about it. And I explained about the egg.
Let's talk about Harry, actually, because you've described him in your poetry over the years and in different interviews and stuff. And it feels like you've been on quite the journey to understand Harry. And I have one of my kids is kind of very similar. And it's taken a while for us to completely understand all of his beautiful ways, let's say. But you also wrote an amazing poem called Wild Child, which is just so beautiful. And for any mother or father who has a child that's a little bit more spirited, shall we say, and less, I always use the word compliant because, you know, it's that thing of, I think society wants our children to be compliant, but in doing so, you take away all of their quirks and their joys and the things that make them children. So I feel like you've been on quite a journey to get where you are with Harry.
Yeah, no, I definitely have. At 4 months old, I sort of knew, around about the time I got pregnant, actually, I knew that he wasn't like other babies. We would go to, like, mother's groups and, like, just little sounds would set him off. If there was a balloon that popped or another baby was crying, we couldn't walk past police sirens, even sad songs. He has always had that really, like, sort of deep feeling nature to him. He's fascinating. But what comes with that are some really big challenges as well. He can be quite black and white in his way of thinking in social situations. Not really so much anymore. This journey has had to be hardened, and I feel like that's kind of the way the world is. They don't know how to deal with these deep feeling souls, and they try to harden that heart. And so, like, I always said to myself, I don't want to let that happen. I want to protect that for him, and I want him to know that this is a superpower that he has. But it is quite a burden, I think, as well, especially as a young child, to carry that kind of, like, weight of other people's feelings and worry.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to things like emotional regulation and things like that, you know, an outburst. And I've heard you say about Harry, and it's very similar here, that it can go from 0 to 100 very, very quickly. And it's kind of managing that. And also when you're in public, kind of blocking out the noise that comes with it and just channeling your child and what they need in that moment. It's, you know, it's the how those triggers kind of come up for you really as well.
It was really tough because they were so close in age. So I was dealing with a baby and a toddler or two toddlers because I would try and take them out and get them out and about and do these things I never really felt comfortable doing because there would be things like other kids' birthday parties. Even a chorus of happy birthday would be enough to absolutely kind of like shut him down and be like, oh, and he just wouldn't know how to react and he would just burst out into tears. And I could almost see I knew what the signs were, but I also would say to him, they're going to sing happy birthday now. I would give him those cues, but he would want to stay. And so then we'd have this sort of meltdown unfold and I would see the tidal wave coming, but it always came so quickly. You know, it's that, that's that 0 to 100. You can anticipate it, But it hits you before you have any time to do anything, you know. And sometimes you just can't diffuse things like that. You just have to sit in the uncomfortableness of it and just go, right, well, I'm going to have to just let this pass and let them know that I'm here when they're ready. But that's really hard to do in public. And yeah. There were a lot of situations like that for me. And there was one, I'll never forget it, I took them to this Air Force museum. He woke up from a nap and he wasn't in good spirits, but it had taken us a long time to get there. So I was like, nope, we're doing it. We're going in. And he was just, I don't know, it was a really windy day and we got out of the car and the wind was really loud. And that was enough. That was enough to just set the whole thing in motion. And I stupidly didn't bring the pram. So, you know, I'm holding him in one arm and I've got Holly in the other arm and I get in there and he just sprawls out on the ground and he is just beside himself. I mean, it's like, it's almost like watching a night terror, but in real time, like during the day. And there was nothing I could do, nothing I could say. And I was horrified because this is a museum. It was very quiet. And I didn't know what to do because I couldn't pick him up. I couldn't get Holly. And I just had this one person come over to me. I think she worked in the cafe. And she just said, can I do anything? Can I help? And I was like, actually, there's not much you can do. She's like, I can take your baby for you. And I was like, oh, no, it's okay. Because I knew she wouldn't want to go to someone.
Yeah.
And she said, well, can I just stand here with you? And I was like, yeah, that would be really nice. I'll never forget her. And I wrote to them after that and I said, there was an angel who came up to me from the cafe and please tell her a huge thank you from me. But just that solidarity in that moment where there was nothing that anyone could do but just be in the storm. But she was in that storm with me and she didn't need to be. But yeah, I'll never forget it.
That is such a beautiful thing. That literally just instantly brought tears to my eyes. That's so gorgeous. Because I think as bystanders and as parents, all we want to do is fix a situation. And she actually did for you what you do for Harry, which is literally just be there. Be there within that, you know, whatever is going on in their world at that moment, because it will pass. And sometimes, especially with, you know, emotional regulation and stuff, a different part of the brain is engaged and you cannot reason when that part of the brain is, you know, is firing. You
no,
simply
there's
can't.
There's no point even trying. Yeah,
no.
Exactly. And, you know, I look at him now and, oh, I'm so proud of him. I mean, you know, we still have some pretty tough moments, but oh my goodness, like when you think that it's just going to always be this way or it's so hard, it's like just have faith. Like these kids are just so brilliant and amazing and you're meant to be their parent. You're their mum for a reason. And like now I look at him and I think, oh, you know, like we have been on a journey. We've had occupational therapists and we've had some amazing teachers as well. And we've really all worked together. But, you know, if you hold that space and you also hold out that hope that, yeah, it's a tough time and it isn't linear, but they'll get there.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're going to change. You don't want them to change.
No.
But they will just come into themselves and work out their place and how it all works.
I imagine give them the confidence to be themselves as well.
That's it, yeah. And that's the most, well, what do they say? Like, it's the bravest thing that you can be is yourself.
Yeah. Mm. How have you managed the things that trigger you? You know, because in those situations, we know that we have to just be there and hold that space for them. But as a child, you know, we would have all heard, I mean, I don't know if you're like me, but I was very much like do as I told and all that stuff. And so when one of your children are acting in a different way, it can often fire things off within you that you really have to fight against.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it was just a different time when we were growing up. I sort of know that if you were acting out or even you just had really big feelings, like for me, I was sent to my room. You know, you go deal with all those big feelings in your room because this is too much for us to deal with. So you go deal with that alone. And that's something I really try not to do because I know that that was done to me. And I think we kind of had like this sort of upbringing of bottling things up. I don't think it was intentional. I don't think it was something that they realized that they were doing. It's just sort of been like perpetuated, I guess, through generations. And it's funny because I wrote The Rainbow in My Heart, my children's book, for Harry when he was two, to help him just like put a name to his feelings and associate it with colors, because I thought, you know, that will really help him. And I was around at my nana's house and her friend saw the book and she goes, oh, is that another fairy feelings book?
And I was she like, didn't realize it was yours.
Yeah, it is another fairy feelings book. Like, oh my goodness. But it's just that kind of, you know, it's like, oh, feelings. Nobody has those, do they? You know, I just think it's like one of those things that is maybe not everybody from that generation. I'm not saying everybody, but it's just we see it so differently now. We see how important it is for mental health struggles to talk about how you're feeling early on. And that's just what I want the kids to know, is that they can always come to us with however they're feeling, and we will listen to them.
Jess, has motherhood changed you?
Oh, it has, completely. I feel like I'm still me. Like, there's still aspects about me that haven't changed. Like, I still love a lot of the same things, but I feel like I've stepped into a new and much better version of myself. Like, I'm a lot softer at the edges now. I'm a lot more selfless, but obviously you have to be, but you want to be.
Yeah.
There's so much, and I feel like I've grown a lot as a person. There's been, like I always say, I feel like so many mirrors are held up to me throughout this journey. And yeah, some are triggering, but some are so needed. And it's just been challenging, but it has been the growth that I needed. And I just cannot imagine being anybody else. Like, I feel like I know this person the most, who I am now.
Absolutely. If you could write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to, and what would you say?
Well, I feel like every time I write something, it's usually to myself. It's almost like a journal entry, I guess.
Yeah.
And so it would always be from my own experience, maybe to past me, just telling me that there are cracks of light through the tunnel the whole way. Even if you can't see it, you will see it later. And to trust the journey and to trust in yourself.
Yeah. Now that my sister-in-law has just had a baby, it takes you back to those early days where it just feels never-ending. And I can absolutely remember thinking, God, this is life now. And it's beautiful because there's life and that's an amazing thing. But, oh my gosh, this is all-consuming and I'm not sleeping. And it can feel like, you know, this is the new way. And actually, it's like you say, light does come through and you will, it'll all pass eventually.
Yeah, it's completely transformational. And I think as well, like, I didn't find that really anybody talked about some of the harder moments. I mean, you don't want to go into motherhood hearing just the hard moments. Like, no one wants to hear that. But there wasn't really a balance. It was just like, oh, you know, congratulations. And then the baby comes, oh, congratulations. I was like, why am I feeling like this? Why is breastfeeding so hard? Why, you know, it just felt like, oh, maybe if more people talked about some of the harder times as well, I wouldn't have felt so alone. I just feel like that would have reframed a few things for me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think, especially with the podcast, it's that thing of whenever we see other people talking about it on TV, especially as a new mum, that's one big place where you're like watching people. If they talk about motherhood, it's always, oh, it's amazing. Because it's really quick, because people are there to promote something else. They don't want to talk about their private life. It's amazing. That's the only thing that you're going to get. Also, because you know that if they are there to talk about it, it's a very nuanced subject and they only get a 5-minute slot. So they don't want to be seen to be not loving it or, you know, ungrateful for being able to have children or anything else. So they keep it very clipped, very short, and they don't go into those nuances. Whereas something like poetry, something like a podcast where it's long form and you get to fill in those blanks, that's when those conversations really happen. And I don't know about you, actually, in terms of like real life, in the present, in the moment stuff, I can remember going to baby groups. I had tried, for some reason, taking on 4 new baby groups in 1 week, and it was so overwhelming. I think Tom had come back and talked to me about neuro pathways and how, you know, at this age it's so important because everything kind of fires off a different pathway and blah blah blah, and I was like, oh my God, I need to fill his time with stuff for 10 weeks. And I can remember going to a few of the classes and just being really overwhelmed and feeling like I have to be a certain way, like I was breastfeeding in the car because I didn't want to do it in there, you know, I didn't want to get a dummy out when I needed it and all these things. And I can remember going and sitting next to one mum, like a baby sign group, and just having that one person go, I haven't slept, and just instantly going, ah, we're not going to pretend it's all perfect and that everything is going swimmingly. I found my person, you know. And I always think that those friendships that you make in those early days, they're not there to add another pressure. They're not there to have another demand. Sometimes being able to slip into someone's WhatsApp at 3 o'clock in the morning, knowing that they are also up, that's the friendship that you need in that moment. So, you know, it's an amazing thing to get out and to meet those people that speak the same language.
Yeah, I honestly could not agree more. That is it. And when I had my antenatal group, it was actually a very short poem that I wrote in one of my books called Welcome to Motherhood. And it was about how you sort of walk into that group. And I just remember this, like it is in my mind, everyone was sitting in a semicircle, stripy tops. And I sat there and everyone was just, you know, we had all just had our babies and we'd all kind of got to know each other, but we were us, but different. And we were all kind of like nervous and, you know, kind of like, oh, and I'm pulling out my formula and other people are trying to figure out the latch. And
yeah,
everyone's just, you know, nervous smiles, exchanging pleasantries. And it wasn't until someone actually said to me, it was me who said it, but they said back, you know, yes, this is really hard. And I just felt like this instant connection, like, oh, I could just breathe and be like, cool.
Yeah.
We can actually be honest with each other. It's just that honesty is just, it's underrated.
Absolutely. And as soon as you say, gosh, it's hard or I'm struggling, it suddenly becomes so much easier.
Well, it does, because I think, you know, vulnerability breeds vulnerability and you kind of like give somebody else that permission to be vulnerable back. And there is such a power in that. And just not feeling like, oh, it's just me. Oh, there's something wrong with me. You're like, oh, no, everyone else experiences this, because actually it's not easy. It is hard. It's okay to be hard. It's supposed to be hard. You're raising a child. It's not going to be easy.
No. Jess, if you could complete these three sentences for me, that would be amazing. The first one is, being a mum means.
Being a mum means, I'm going to paraphrase something that I've heard, but I really love it. Being a mum means not only dying for your child, but living for them.
Oh, I love that. Since having children,
I have grown in the most beautiful ways.
And then finally, I'm happy when?
I'm happy when my kids wake up in the morning and I'm happy when they go to sleep at night.
I love that. Jess, thank you so much. I know that you've stayed up late to be able to chat, and it's amazing.
You.
Honestly. You know that I absolutely adore your work. Beautiful Chaos is absolutely sublime. And anyone listening, buy one for yourself, buy one for a mate, because it's just a beautiful thing for your heart. And you can tell that it's directly from yours, Jess. So it's beautiful.
Oh, you're amazing. Thank you. I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.